Peel your eyes off your RSS feeds. Take a break from your tweeting. Put down your Facebook liking thumb. It's time to tune in and discuss the latest in technology news headlines instead of just scanning and grunting. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, learn about the new Swedish religion with the central dogma that file sharing is sacred. Plus, learn how Apple is working on a smaller 19-pin dock port for the new iPhone 5, a move that will send shockwaves through the iPhone third-party accessory business. And we explore a new trend in computers and tablets for Retina and Retina-like displays. That's all ahead on Central Standard with the Computer Guys after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Technology is changing around us at exponential speeds. Even if you are the tweetiest tweeter, the mayor of Foursquare mayors, the master of Facebook likety likes, there are still stories left to be discovered in the technology universe. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today, a technology news lightning round for the whole show. Without the lightning, rather thunder. Examining what's making noise on the technology news scene with a look at the top headlines and interesting footnotes in this summer. Joining us for this discussion are the Computer Guys IT pro Thomas O'Brien of Ideology and Mac expert George Costello. Welcome, gentlemen.
Morning.
I'm a pro now.
How about that?
You're a pro. Now, cool. As we put up this conversation for pros and non-pros, Kansas City, what are the technology stories you've been following lately, following this summer, following this spring, following into the fall and winter? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also send your questions and comments technologically to centralstandard@kcur.org over something called email. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST. Again, we want to know what technology stories you've been following lately. So let's jump right into it. Let's begin with Facebook. Several million shares will become available for investors to sell this week. Early insiders, early investors, people who got in on the dubious IPO. What do you think this latest share issuance will bring about for Facebook?
I love how they call this an exit strategy, right? You have a private company, you build it up, and then you exit by selling your shares. And what happens is that the insiders are usually constrained from selling their shares for a period of time before or after the IPO, and then they get to release a certain amount. I don't know what the rules are. They're different in every company. So it'll be really interesting to see what the Facebook insiders, how they cash out.
Do you think, given the rocky start, some early investors will jump ship?
It won't send a good signal if they do. You know, the signal if they start selling is going to be, they're trying to, you know, jump ship and get the cash in their pocket thinking that the stock may go down. So probably there's some pressure on the inside to hang on to your stock.
On the other hand,
woo-oo is a bad thing, by the way. Woo-oo?
Woo-oo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
On the other hand, the people that have those shares typically get them either as an award, a gift, or they have so little money, you know, in it that even at depressed prices, they might elect to sell some of their shares to lock in, you know, the cash. So we'll just have to see how big that that movement is.
Profit taking usually leads to a dilution or drop off in stock, even in a large volume. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Facebook.
Right. Yeah, and they're subject to the general market conditions and all that other stuff, too, of course.
Right, right. Yeah. All that SEC footnote stuff, subject to credit, all that stuff, you know, in the bottom of the...
If you had Facebook stock, would you sell it?
I would probably dump it.
Yeah, me too.
Apple is working on a smaller 19-pin dock port for the new iPhone 5. George, a move that will send shockwaves through the iPhone third-party accessory business community?
Well, you can look at it, it's a two-edged sword. You know, it causes a problem for people that have products in the marketplace, but on the other hand, it creates a whole new market, you know, for them. So people that have existing products. Let's say you bought an alarm clock radio type of thing, and you know it's got the old a 30-pin connector where you could stick your iPad or your iPod rather into it. Now you might have to buy a new clock radio, you know, with the new dock connector. So in that sense, I guess it's good for business.
Why would Apple want to alienate or stick a thorn in the side of third-party accessory business companies?
The history of Apple going all the way back to the Mac Plus in 1986 is that they are continually on a mission to make their connectors smaller. They started out, the very first connector for a mouse was a 9-pin VGA-style connector, which they immediately dropped to a small round pin connector. And, I mean, they've been doing it ever since they've been in business to make the connectors smaller and smaller.
Well, but the reason why is smaller is cheaper usually also. And Apple has a long history of taking things out of their computers, making them lighter, making them cheaper, combining things onto one circuit board.
And it also saves space. So if you're making products smaller, it's easier to put those connectors on it when the connectors are smaller.
What would a new port look like?
Same as the old port, only not as wide.
There'll be 19 of them, little dots.
Yeah, right.
And
maybe it'll look like the headlights on those Audis, those LED headlights.
LEDs.
Kind of curvy.
Is this so the hardware can last longer? Is it less likely to get broken?
He just said it. I mean, they're cheaper to make, and they're more convenient. So that's why they do it.
A little cheaper and convenient.
Can't beat that.
Speaking of Apple, Tom, the news of Matt Honan's Apple account being hacked and the subsequent loss of all of his personal data, pretty big deal. What are the implications for Apple and Amazon?
This has been all over the news. It's really fascinating because what it is you've got a writer for Wired, Matt Honan, who didn't back up his data anywhere, and then he gets hacked and he loses all his stuff. And, you know, and it's a story. But the story, to me, is back up your data. The second part of the story is all the other stuff that happened. And what it means is that people have become complacent at the big companies. Amazon and Apple both made errors or had faulty systems that allowed somebody else to get Matt's information.
Well,
his login
they were able to deduce it because things were sort of daisy-chained together.
Right.
So...
sort of daisy, but listen, start with this one. If they got his Amazon account first, they could have done all sorts of stuff with whatever his Amazon accounts did. It just because he happened to have it linked to Apple, that gave him a gateway into, you know, wrecking all his Apple stuff. And it also shows you the downside of the Find My iPhone, Find My PC remote wipe thing. Now, you know, from my standpoint, we manage business phones, and if somebody loses a business phone, you want to be able to remote wipe the data so that if somebody finds it, they're not going to find any secret business stuff. And the same thing with their iPhone or their Android. But, you know, and for a person, that would makes a lot of sense. However, we've just seen the big downside of that because the hacker was able to just wipe it all away.
What's your preferred method of backing up your data? This is not something you do on a dance floor, right? Backing you up as
along with the do-si-do.
Right. Yeah. What's your preferred method of backup?
I back up my data to a external hard drive. I have three of them, and I rotate them, and I hide one.
That makes sense. Do you use cloud storage or any type of non-hardware storage?
Yeah, I use some cloud storage for various things, but the ultimate is always something that I can carry around with me and keep and manage on my own.
You're being kind of vague there. Some cloud storage?
Yeah, like for, you know, certain photographs and certain documents, but not all, not by all. You know, it's handy. Cloud stuff is really handy to when you're mobile, when you're moving around so that you can, you know, check stuff out and you don't have to be at that computer. So I try to put the stuff that needs to be mobile in the cloud.
Although we're getting to the point where flash drives are so big anymore that you'll be able to put most of that stuff on a flash drive and throw it in your pocket.
And lose it and put it in the laundry.
Well, that's true. That's a possibility.
Right. Yeah.
And take your pants to the thrift store when they get old and there it goes.
Right.
That what you do?
No.
Okay. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFolte. LaFall.
Oh, good.
I can't pronounce my own name today.
Hey, wait a minute. Can we go back to Matt for a second, to the previous story? Can we back up for just a second?
The thrift store?
No,
the backup?
The Matt Honan lost all his data stuff.
Right.
Because the other thrust of this was to start using two-step verification of your Google account.
Right.
And, you know, everybody just has a password these days, and passwords can get hacked. The password hacking software is really good. So it's really easy to hack a password. If you have two-step verification, what Google and a lot of other companies do is you enter your password, but periodically they'll send a text to your phone, and they figure that that phone is on your person, so you're going to be able to verify that way. So consequently, that's something to think about. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do for most people. So if you decide to increase your level of security by going to two-step verification, be sure and read the documentation, maybe talk to somebody that's already done it, because it is a bit of a process.
And the other thing is, you probably should have a separate password for any major account, meaning you'd have one password for Amazon, a different one for Apple, so that a person who hacks one doesn't automatically have access to the other.
Yeah, so like the name of your dog on one and the name of your cat on another.
Oh, sure, right, yeah.
Yeah, because those are very complex passwords.
Right.
I'm Jabalani LaFall, your host of Central Standard. Joining us for a discussion on tech news are the Computer Guys IT Pro, Thomas O'Brien, and Mac Expert, George Costello. They comprise the Computer Guys duo. Kansas City, what technology stories have you been following lately? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also send your questions and comments to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST. Any tech questions, feel free to call in as well. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. Mark in Midtown, you're on Central Standard.
Thank you, Jalwani, for taking my call. I have a question probably for the Matt guy. I'm going to very likely be teaching in China for a year commitment and maybe longer. My question is this. Would I be better off buying probably a Mac notebook, some sort of Mac notebook, and perhaps an iPhone here in the States before I go? Or would I be better off buying in China? And one possibility is just I have a little Mac Mini. The one possibility is just buying a camera for it so I can Skype with friends and family back in the States.
Well, first of all, as far as the hardware is concerned, when you're traveling, you know, the worst thing that you can do is to have a bag full of stuff that you could lose. So if you bought a small, maybe a MacBook Air or something like that that's all solid state, number one, you would eliminate any possibility, let's hopefully say that you would eliminate a possibility from doing damage to the unit if you jostle it around or you drop it, because it has no mechanical moving parts in it. It's got a camera built in, so you can Skype that way. So I think that's how I would approach it if I were you. As far as the phone is concerned, you probably ought to wait and buy one when you're over there, because they use a different system. The biggest provider over there is China Mobile, and they're just coming on stream with Apple. So, and they probably use a different SIM card set up in the phone. So you might want to hold off on that and do it when you get there.
Matter of fact, the only provider of mobile services over there is China Mobile. Basically, they have probably about a 95% monopoly on the mobile market. There's Unicom, Telecom, there's the fixed line, and then there's China Mobile, which is like the Goliath. So Mark definitely might want to wait to get the hookup on that.
I think so.
Thank you, George, and thank you, Mark, for your questions. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. If you're following tech news, or if you have general tech questions for our Computer Guys as we discuss the technology news of the day and of the summer, give us a call, 816-235-2888. Central Standard at kcur.org is our email address. Facebook is also an option, at kcurcst. You can tweet in your questions and comments. Let's move on and talk about app.net, the project which seeks to build a programming interface framework for developers. It achieves its crowdfunding goal of $500,000 this week. Not a lot of money, but tech pundits are focusing on the open source components and the company motto, which says users and developers will come first, not advertisers. Tom, what do you make of that?
Well, that last part is the most important part. I think a lot of people are getting really tired of serving the advertiser. You know, the good part about having advertising built into a lot of the apps that you use is that you can get the app for free or for very cheap. But the other bad part about it is that the developer has to spend some time supporting that ad model, and you have to look at them or at least deal with them in some way. So the whole purpose of app.net is to create it's another attempt to create the ascendancy of the paid model. Pay for your software. Amazing. So there would be no ads.
But also develop your own software if you please.
Well, they want to do a platform. I think his first project is going to try to do an emulate Twitter in some way, mm-hmm. just some sort of a kind of a social networking messaging kind of platform, which is, I think, a really good idea. Because competition is always good, and the advertising component of it, that may or may not make a lot of sense, because it's a model that has grown over the last 20 years. So it's very strong. It's well entrenched. There's a lot of money being made on advertising in apps, and it's going to be really difficult for him to change people's behavior such that they will pay $2 or $3 a month for something.
All right. We have a question from listener Greg. Would you please comment on the pluses and minuses of VPN, voice protocol networks? The pluses and minuses of VPN. Greg, a listener, asked about that.
You mean virtual private network?
Or virtual private networks.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, it's helpful if, you know, you want to do something that's
VPNs are what they are secure networks. Right. They use a protocol called IPsec. And in order to participate in a VPN, you can send your data across it and nobody else can really see
it. It's like a tunnel.
Right. It creates a tunnel between you and their server or whatever. There are two kind of styles. One is what we call a nailed up VPN, where your firewall and the other firewall already know the VPN language and they just create that permanent tunnel. And you don't have to worry about anything on the user side of things. The other way is that if you are a user who's mobile, particularly using a laptop or a phone, you have to install a little bit of VPN software on that device so that you can connect to your home office VPN. So the other alternative to VPNs for a lot of people is what is called
a voice remote, protocol
network. Remote desktop connection, for instance.
Right,
so with
right.
Microsoft, you can just use the remote desktop connection software that's built into Windows and connect to another server anywhere or another computer. And it only sends the keyboard strokes and the mouse movements. It doesn't actually send any data. So it's fairly lightweight. And so usually people contrast the VPN versus remote desktop, those two. Now I'm getting to my preference part. Greg, I generally, for most smaller, small, medium businesses, prefer the remote desktop when we can possibly do it. VPN can be very bandwidth heavy. It can consume a lot of bandwidth, and there are just a lot of occasionally user issues with that. But it's really great if you have branch offices and that sort of thing that are sort of permanently connected. So the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, is the remote desktop connection.
And if it's something simple, you could use a program like Dropbox.
Yeah.
You know.
There are lots of alternatives
right.
to use those things, too.
Jack in Leawood calls in and writes in to remind us that computers are much less expensive in the U.S. Jack in Leawood says this. Is this necessarily true, George?
Yeah, generally speaking, it is, yeah.
Matt in Indy writes, is the next OS going to work on my 5 or 6 year old Mac?
Well, it depends on which model he has. I could sum it up this way. Apple abandoned support for any PowerPC-based machine. That means a G3, a G4, or a G5.
These are not corporate jets.
These are processors.
Okay.
And so effective with OS 10.6 forward, only runs on an Intel-based machine. Now, Apple is at the point with 10.8, which just came out here recently, where they're actually starting to abandon support for early models of the Intel series. So it's all a function of which machine you have, and then you're going to have to read the system requirements on whatever OS you want to install. Plus, you can't install anything older than what came on the machine when it was new. So
use what you've got until you run into a wall.
Right, I would. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Joseph and Shani, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I had a comment that ties in pretty nicely with the phasing out the old stuff, but relating back to the question on the size of the connector on the new iPhone, my understanding is that the previous connector had sufficient pins to support two different models of connector. And one of the things that they'll be doing with this new pin is compressing out some of the old pins so that it's a looking forward, bringing new technology into the picture kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's abandoning stuff. There were a couple of pins that were devoted to FireWire and other things like that that they're not using anymore. So there's really no need for those pins to be there at all.
All right. Thank you very much, Joseph. Sam in KC Mo, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello and good afternoon, or good morning.
Hello and good afternoon. Yeah. You're a futurist as well.
Yeah, good morning.
All right.
Yeah,
come on, Sam.
I can only hope. I got two questions for you. First things first, the thing is that I keep seeing the advertisements for Windows 8 as opposed to Windows 7. What's the deal?
Windows 8 is coming out in October. Windows 8 Consumer Preview has been out for 3 or 4 months. And Windows 8 sports Microsoft's new interface, which used to be called Metro, but now it's called Windows 8.
Why did they call it Metro? No,
they thought that was cool, but then they ran into some copyright issues with a company in Germany, so they decided to bag Metro and go with Windows 8.
And probably a gang of bus services and train services as well.
Yeah, probably something like that. So
right.
Windows 8 is going to have kind of a blocky interface, and it's pretty cool. It's a new version of Windows, and you just got to kind of go there if you want.
Okay, that's the thing right now. I'm saving my nickels and dimes so I can buy something that may have it come October. But at the same time, where does a guy like me, 58-year-old Latino male, that doesn't know from nothing about a computer except what powers his car and his watch, where does he go to learn how to utilize that equipment?
We're looking at operating systems for 58-year-old Latino males. Go, Tom.
I would go
yo soy,
to...
Yo soy.
Hey, yo soy, yo soy.
You know, I think it's the junior colleges in this area all have really good computer classes, and that's kind of the place I would start.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd probably be starting my personal network of friends to help me out when I need to have a problem at 10:30 at night or earlier in the morning.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I've asked a lot of the people that, quote-unquote, are in my area, and, the deer in the headlights look.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of resources online.
That's true.
You just have to kind of find it. But there's just tons of tutorials out there. And you can find them if you do some searching.
Yeah, there's...
Well, I'm
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, please.
Local library
is good as well. I'm this kind of guy. I mean, you can tell me where you live, but if you don't take me by the hand, I ain't going to get there.
Well, then you're going to need somebody maybe in a class situation. You might go out to the Microsoft store out at Oak Park and see what they've got. They might have a series of classes available out there. In fact, you could go online and ask that.
But I don't have a computer yet.
Okay.
They'll definitely lead you by the hand out of there. Right. If you want to be led by the hand.
But, so if you're really starting.
What should I buy, too?
If you're really starting from the very beginning, absolute zero, number one, you are really going to have to put some effort into it.
Right.
Seriously. So, and the good thing about it is that effort's going to pay off over time. So, the more you try to learn, the more you will learn. Part of learning is making mistakes. So, you're just going to have to go make some mistakes. And what we're suggesting, there are a bunch of beginner's classes that actually you would actually qualify for SeniorNet, which is a local support group for seniors. Hate to use that term, at your current age, but they operate out of Johnson County Community College.
Right.
I think it's SeniorNet.org
or
SeniorNetKC or something like that. And they have lots of classes that are for very, very beginning people. That would probably be a really good
place
to
start. And I think they've
got
their own classroom-type teaching facility. Also, another thing that you might consider to getting your feet wet is start with a tablet. You know, tablets are cheaper, they're simpler, they're easier
Brilliant.
To use. Really, that might be a much better way to go.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so my situation should be I buy a tablet and then, you know, search to get information so I can utilize that well?
Well, that would be one possibility, sure.
Or you could go to SeniorNet without a computer.
Or you could go to SeniorNet,
what they
right.
have to say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
We like that.
Well, I thank you for this show, and I expect great from KCR because I also donate, and I'm just happy with you guys in many more ways than one.
Great.
Well, we're happy with you, too,
for the education.
Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Bye
Sam,
now.
For selling your personal story. Fuerte. All right. Speaking of sharing personal stories, Microsoft is launching a few pop-up holiday stores. Pop-up mm-hmm. stores, really? On one hand, it's innovative. On the other school of thought, it's, please,
well, it's
buy our Windows.
Are they going to sell sunglasses, too?
Yeah, right. They'll sell at a kiosk. I've lost track of how many thousands of Apple stores there are now, you know, around. But they got to do something because they're late to this game, and they have very few stores in the United States that are operational. I mean, we just happen to be lucky that there's one in Kansas City. But this is a pop-up store as a way for them to increase their presence locally in the Christmas buying season.
When Windows 8 has just been
launched.
When
Windows is just
right.
coming out.
Isn't that exactly. kind of like the Michael Bublé of... technology
Michael
retail,
Bublé,
right?
Bublé,
they gotta go. They gotta
right.
do something.
Right. Okay. We're discussing the most interesting and prominent technology news headlines of the summer and the Michael Bublé's of technology retail efforts with the computer guys, IT pro Thomas O'Brien and Mac expert George Costello. Still taking your calls. We're gonna take a quick break. When we return, we'll keep the chat room going with more events, news analysis, and examinations in surreal tech news. Kansas City, what technology stories have you been following lately? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also send in questions, comments, and concerns, frankly, to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Whether you call it big data or big data, we've got technology news here for you today. We're discussing the most interesting and prominent technology news headlines of the summer with the computer guys, IT pro Thomas O'Brien and Mac expert George Costello. Thank you very much for joining us for the second half of the hour.
Can I throw something in, George? The caller that we had earlier in the show, who I'm assuming is still listening, the guy that was going to China, you know, when we were talking about that, I forgot to mention, you know, that Apple is in the process of opening Apple retail stores in China right now.
Well, they opened one up in Shanghai late last year.
Well, they've got a couple that right. that are in the process of being opened. So depending upon where he's going, I would urge him to check the website here, apple.com/retail/China or something like that, and find out where those stores are, because that way when he gets over there, he'll have a resource.
Kansas City, we're also asking you, what technology stories have you been following lately and what technology questions do you have for our computer guys? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also send your questions in and your comments to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST. Before we get into the questioning, let's go to Jackie.
And then maybe not.
Jackie in Overland Park.
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Yes.
Yeah, that's another carrier. You have to be careful.
Right.
And what I have. I just enrolled in eVoice, and I was curious just, what you guys thought about it. And I don't know what this VOI calling is.
V-O-I-P.
V-O-I-P.
Right. We don't know what eVoice is. Tell me what eVoice is.
eVoice is a virtual receptionist. You don't have to. Ah. You have a telephone number.
And we call and you, and they answer, and they say, what do you want? And then they say, okay, Jackie, we'll be with you in a minute.
Well, it's all automated. It's right. not. It's a computer
Jackie.
Message.
Jackie, how can you guarantee we're not talking to eVoice right now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Good question. Well, you don't sound like a computer.
Right.
Well, then it in turn gives you a text voicemail or a voice voicemail, and then I can opt to return the call. Or it goes to my cell phone. I guess the whole idea is that you can have your businesses very mobile.
Right. Is this a paid service?
It's a call screening.
Yeah.
Right. Is it what? I'm sorry?
Is it paid? Is this...
Yeah, she pays
yeah.
for it.
Okay.
Yes. And you have to pay $40 setup fee to port your own number.
Yeah.
There's another one out there, Grasshopper, but I enrolled in that one, and I got to the end, and there were all these things attached to porting your number. So I just told them, forget it, and they refunded my money. But
okay, so you're doing two things. One is you're taking your one of your phone numbers, and you're porting them to that service. And then from there, they're controlling how – the calls come to you based on the preferences that you set whenever, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's my understanding. I just enrolled yesterday.
Yeah.
Did you look at services that are free, like maybe Google Voice?
Well, no.
Okay.
No,
you might want to check that out.
I should have called you last week.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it's a free one-month trial.
Okay.
Google Voice?
What's your question, Jackie? What is your concern or question about eVoice or Grasshopper?
Well, I want to know if you guys were familiar with them. Obviously, you're not.
No.
But you helped.
Well, we're familiar with the concepts, though. We know about those concepts. And I'll tell you what, if it's for a specific purpose, it may work really well for you because if you get, for instance, a lot of calls or you have an ad out or something like that and you're going to need to deal with a lot of those and you're just a one-person consultant or whatever, then that lets you manage that incoming traffic. You don't have to be anywhere to, you know, pick up the phone. So I think in that sense it could be great. And it's just sort of another type of voicemail, if you think of it that way.
Yeah, but if it's not for a business and it's just a personal thing, then I'd go look at Google Voice.
Sure.
Thank you, Jackie, for your input.
And good luck.
Mm-hmm. And good luck. We're asking all of our listeners to call in today, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Call in today and listen to us talk about the technology stories of the summer. You can also send in your questions or comments to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST and listen to George Costello take deep, deep breaths.
Wow.
And you can get free advice.
And free advice.
We know what that's worth.
And free advice. Thomas, right. Speaking of free advice and deep breaths, you've been following a Swedish religion where file sharing is the central dogma. Tell us about that.
No, I am not following that.
You
religion.
Are following it. You talked about it before on a previous show.
It was
I'll
this
tell you,
one
I'll tell
over
you
here.
Where it came from. It came out of the days of Napster. You remember when there was all that music stuff back and forth, and there were people who fervently believed that they had a right, you know, to download and use this music without paying copyright. So somebody hit upon the bright idea that some things that are illegal out in the normal world are okay when you disguise it behind a religion. It's like Indians who use peyote or people who use marijuana as part of a religious ritual. And so they got this idea that if they could get an endorsement from a government or other type of body like that, that they could get away with this illegal activity that they were doing. Well, they didn't have a whole lot of success. They took a couple of runs at the government in Sweden before they were able to get it through. But the funny part is that somehow somebody bought this notion and actually gave them an official sanction that file sharing was a sacred, sacrosanct, whatever. So,
downloading Batman.
Yeah.
Type of deal.
It's crazy what people do.
I like the chant, though.
Right.
That's good.
Right.
You got a chant.
File sharing. What's going on? Speaking of not file sharing. Barnes & Noble is cutting prices on its Nook e-reader. What's happening here? Are they trying to catch up to Kindle or something else afoot?
Pretty much.
Maybe they got a new version coming out.
Lenovo, let's move on to that. The company that overtook IBM's PC business is launching a tablet based on the Windows RT operating system. Tell us about Windows RT and why is Lenovo doing this?
Well, actually, Windows RT is kind of a slimmed-down version of Windows 8. It's a tablet it's designed specifically for a tablet. So Lenovo is just probably one of the first. And you can actually buy that. They call it a Yogi. I forget which one they called it, but that's their code name for that. Tablet.
Like Metro?
Yeah, kind of like
right, okay. Right. Yogi and Metro.
You can either – you can buy Windows 8 on it when it comes out, but that will be a kind of heavier, more power-using version, or you can buy it with Windows RT, which is a little lighter and is less battery-intensive. So you'll have a couple of choices. But there are things in Windows RT that are not, you know, ready – not as fully – featured
out, yeah.
As the Windows 8 stuff. For instance, Office 13 on Windows RT is going to it'll disable macros and stuff like that, so it won't be as full featured.
Speaking of Lenovo's former PC business, the company formerly known as what Lenovo's PC business is now, it's called IBM. There's chatter that IBM is one of the corporate vultures swooping over Research in Motion. In particular, they want to buy Research in Motion's enterprise services business. What's in it for IBM if this is true? And is Research in Motion on the chopping block?
In this case, the word vulture is pretty good.
Right.
Because
yeah.
We all know that Research in Motion has been having a tough time lately. And they're out in the middle of the desert, and they're not going very fast.
And if people that are listening don't know about Research in Motion...
They're the makers of the BlackBerry.
They're the people right. That make the BlackBerry. Right.
Right. What businesses other than their BlackBerry business are valuable or could be up for sale?
They may have some patents. You know, everybody's after patents at this point. Technology.
Yeah, they got a few of those. But really, their main thing is that they are strong in corporate email.
True.
And email to the mobile phone.
Right.
And so I think that's where IBM's probably really interested. There's a lot of customers there, and there are a lot of people that really still
love their BlackBerries. Right.
And service support.
Yep, exactly.
Would be a good
yeah.
And the chance to fold them into something that IBM's already got.
Certainly.
Over time.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. With us are computer guys, Thomas O'Brien of Ideology. He's an IT professional.
Whoa.
And Mac expert, George Costello. Kansas City, what technology stories have you been following lately? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 for your technology story commentary, as well as your questions and concerns regarding personal technology as well. Write in to centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at centralstandard@kcur.org. You cannot tweet us there. You can actually tweet us at KCURCST. I was just doing that to see if you were listening, audience.
There's too many ways.
Evan writes in, Samsung is going to release a couple of pin-based systems this month. What are your thoughts re this direction?
Pin-based systems.
P-E-N.
Oh, like stylus?
Right.
Oh.
Right, stylus.
Go for it. Just don't lose your pin.
Go for it.
They're like $40.
Don't lose your pin
yeah.
Or your number code either.
You know, I think that when we think about devices anymore, there's such a huge number of different devices. There are devices for specific reasons, for example, or use cases. A pen-based device would be great in a clinical setting for people that have to take notes, physicians, those types of things. They don't want to maybe use their fingers to tap on a screen, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a specific need that you might have. If you need to do handwriting on a tablet, then a pen is the best way to do it. Try handwriting with your index finger. It doesn't work very well.
Right.
But a pen works really great.
Steve Jobs was said to be very anti-stylus or anti-pen, especially when the Palm Pilot was out. Why was Steve Jobs against that so much?
Who knows?
He kept losing them. He couldn't find them.
Yeah, right. There were a lot of things that, you know, the word is that when they were developing the very first iPhone, that he was opposed to putting apps on it and had to be talked into it. Nobody knows exactly what was in his mind. You know, he was revered for his future vision. I mean, he did get the concept of a smartphone, but the details, you know, he wasn't always right about the details. So we don't know why he thought the way he did.
But seriously, a pen is easily losable.
Exactly.
So, and if you, for instance, use some of these tablets, like the motion computing ones, some of the older ones, they are literally $40 to $60 to replace.
Yeah.
And they have a battery, and the battery is usually a lithium battery that's, you know, another $6.
If you can find it.
Right.
And that's why I was telling our caller earlier who's going to China to get a laptop, because otherwise you got keyboards and mice and monitors and Mac minis and maybe a camera. You got all these separate pieces. It's too much to juggle, and it's too easy to lose.
Monitors, mice, Mac minis.
Yeah.
I'd like to see you juggle those. That'd be kind of fun.
Thank you.
Very alliterative as well. Kansas City, what technology stories have you been following? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also send in your questions, comments, and concerns to centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at KCURCST, as well as Facebook, as well as call in, 816-235-2888. Lyle asks, do you think the keyboard buttons you press or push, the classic non-touch screen, will eventually go the way of the typewriter? Keyboards, will they become Smith Corona?
Yeah, there's somebody out on the net with a list of 10 things or 7 things that will last for a really, really long time and won't go away, and the keyboard is one of them, but I disagree. I think virtual keyboards will eventually take over, and that means that it'll just be a little infrared beam that'll be shot at a surface, and you can move your fingers in the air or whatever you want to do.
Although Apple just submitted a new patent for a new type of keyboard.
Okay, I'm wrong.
No, not necessarily. I'm just saying that they're still working on it.
Well, speaking of new types of keyboards, the OneTouch portable keyboard that connects with your handset, your smartphone, via near-field communications technology or NFC technology, it just dropped into Japan. The way you works is that you drop your smartphone on the NFC-based keyboard, and then Yahtzee. It's this viable alternative to tablets and PCs.
Not every phone has an NFC chip. Some of them, in fact, the iPhone does not, correct?
Right, not yet.
The Google phone does, and a couple others. So first you have to have an NFC chip. That is a little device that is good within a few inches to communicate with something else. So for that, yeah, you just drop it in the center. The keyboard is a little funny looking because it has a left and a right, and you put your phone in the center.
It's like a Dvorak keyboard almost.
Yeah, well, you have to keep your hands kind of apart from one another.
No home keys.
You can't cross over like I do sometimes, you know, using my left hand and the right hand.
Do you really
get a piano player?
You really get Jerry Lee Lewis on your computer?
You wouldn't want to watch Tom type.
Boy, when I get going, it's pretty
scary.
Amazing.
Do you stand up and say Great Balls of Fire as well?
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow. IMS research is saying that wearable wireless devices will grow from 14 million items this year to as many as 171 million items in 2016.
No way.
What are these items? What is wearable technology? And why are these forecasts so bullish?
Oh, people get, you know, they get fixated on some idea and they think that it's the future. Wireless or wearable technology so far hasn't really gone anywhere. Google had Google goggles. I mean, that's sort of in that category.
There's a lot of people that are walking around talking on their cell phones with one of those little wearable things in their
wearable.
Door.
Wearable would be something that's in
you can't accessorize
or
Bluetooth.
Put it on
you actually look kind of like a rube.
Yeah, a little bit with
the Bluetooth, especially when you're talking and you're talking from a side where no one can see your Bluetooth.
Right.
I know that's bad. That's
yeesh.
Bad.
Yeesh, yeesh. But wearable technology is more of the sort of NFC-type devices that attract scanning or that can pick up the Internet of Things, so to speak, connect you in a network.
I think the guy
from your collar.
Yeah, that remains to be seen how that's going to work.
They'll be all over the place.
Listener Alan says he just bought a Nexus 7 tablet. He loves it, even though it's an Android 4.1 Jelly Bean.
Yeah.
Adobe Flash is incompatible. He wanted Android to be Flash compatible. And is disappointed. He's tried Dolphin and UT Flash, but it will not work. Help. Nexus 7 tablet and Adobe Flash is not interoperable with that.
He should have checked it before he bought it.
You should have checked it before you bought it, Alan.
I mean,
how do you run down a checklist of what's interoperable and what's compatible?
Well, you go to the website and you start pouring through the statistics on the technical specs. You know, and if you don't get an answer, you pick up the phone and you call them on an 800 number and you ask somebody.
But a lot of tablets are not Adobe Flash compatible because of the power usage issue. They want to have a lot of long battery life, and Flash is pretty good at exercising your battery.
iPads won't use Flash. So.
Right. So it's not unusual. And, you know, in the next couple of years, they'll move past Flash, hopefully, into the HTML5 world, and you won't have to worry about it.
Well, Adobe has already stated publicly that they're going to abandon Flash and go to HTML5. So
there you go.
Speaking of planned obsolescence or deliberate obsolescence, a lot of that happens in technology product releases and technology product cycles. Speaking of which, George, something you might not like or might sneer at, something called the YouGov Brand Index says Apple is getting old. Apple has become far more appealing to adults age 35 and older, while its appeal to those in the coveted 18 to 34 demographic has decreased slightly, according to the survey. Does this start with the expensive price of all the gadgets? Are they getting it wrong? What's up, George? What do you say to that?
I say that the person that's making that comment is somebody that's unknown and wants some publicity. I also think that he's completely wrong. I mean, everything has a life cycle, whether it's a country or a company, but we're far from the end of the life cycle. In fact, the word is that business is so good at suppliers over in Asia for Apple that they are selling so many components now compared to what they did just a year ago that they think that we are on the verge of some of the biggest product launches in history coming this fall. So Apple is far from dead. You know, eventually somebody else will rise. It's just like Microsoft used to be the 800-pound gorilla, you know. Now they aren't.
What was before Microsoft?
Nothing.
IBM.
We had typewriters.
That's
IBM.
Right. Yep, it was IBM.
Yeah. And before IBM, Smith Corona.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. That goes way back.
Curtis, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, how you doing? I love it when you guys talk tech.
help us. Help us out.
My question is, back in June, I bought myself a 27-inch iMac, and I'm running Lion. And now with Mountain Lion that has just come out, my question is basically about antivirus.
Mm-hmm.
Do I really need one? Because if I do need one, my wife has access to free antivirus through her work. But it's McAfee, and I've heard horror stories about putting antivirus on a Mac, and it makes it run terribly slow.
Well, that's not true, but go ahead.
Or if I'm eligible for a free update to the Mountain Lion, would that be a better way to go?
Okay. People that are regular listeners of this show have heard me say this repeatedly over the years. Don't be the first one on your block to get the newest edition of anything, particularly software. 10.8 has come out, and they've already found issues with it. If you got a laptop, there are battery life issues, and then there's a host of smaller issues. They're already issuing 10.8.1. It takes a couple of months for a new operating system. I don't care who puts it out. It takes a couple of months for people to discover the problems that were missed in the beta testing phase. So you never want to be the first one on your block to upgrade. Wait until it's 10.8.3, maybe, you know, before you even consider moving from where you are now. That's the first part of your question. Second part is that there's a lot of good antivirus out there for the Mac. One of the ones that I like, which is free, is put out by Sophos. Sophos, the home edition is free, but your problem is that when you are on the cutting edge of the latest OS versions, sometimes the software isn't quite ready yet and needs to be revved. So it probably doesn't work with 10.8. I think they've got a version out now I take that back. I just saw the other day that they did release a version for 10.8. But take a look at Sophos Antivirus on the Mac. Totally transparent. You won't even know it's there.
George Costello does not like repeating himself, listeners out there in radio land. So don't be the first one to buy a piece of software or hardware. That's George Costello's main staple. Speaking of which, as we wind down here, we found a list of gadgets that are set or said to be going extinct by 2020. Standalone GPS units is one of them. Chime in on each one.
If I'm out in the desert, I need a GPS unit. I might not have my phone. I need to load my maps. I think maybe there's still going to be a niche for those.
So yes or no by 2020?
No.
No. E-readers, by 2020, are they gone?
Yeah.
They are?
No.
No. Okay. Cell phones that only make calls, are they gone by 2020?
Yes.
No.
Gone, gone, gone.
No.
Why?
Because there are always going to be a minority of people that are Luddites. You know, and they don't care about smartphones, and they don't care. All they want to do is make a phone call.
They'll still buy one of those cell phones and just not use the stuff in them.
So 2020.
They'll buy the $15 disposable cell phone.
You think they're gone, though?
I do.
Why?
Because everybody's going to be wanting to do other stuff with it. It's a multifunction device, and that's the purpose of it.
Next item, digital cameras. Gone by 2020 or not?
At the consumer level, yes. At the professional level, no.
Or the prosumer level, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of in-between people that are really – photography is an art as well as a science. There are a lot of people that really like to do it. I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity.
Prosumer? You
know, prosumer.
One of the most famous photographers is Annie Leibovitz.
Yes.
And somebody asked her, if you were just an ordinary person, what would you recommend as a beginner's camera? And she said, an iPhone.
Wow. Straight from Annie Leibovitz
yep.
of Vanity Fair fame.
Yep.
Famed
yep.
photographer says, use an iPhone. Big endorser of that. Speaking of which, we've been talking who endorses what and what are the most interesting and prominent technology news headlines of the summer. The computer guys are Thomas O'Brien and Mac expert George Costello. Thank you very much for chiming in. The remaining two items were DVD players and dedicated video game machines.
Gone, gone.
Those are gone now. Basically.
Out of here.
All right. Thank you, fellas, for coming by.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow when we take you inside the life of a former Greyhound race announcer who has taken his work online. Plus, what happens when you start your sweet new business on top of an old morgue. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with the book Doctors. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.